You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm your host, Damian Perdue, your guide on this metaphysical ride through audio delights. And of course, on the boards is Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
But today, we are joined by special guest,
hello.
Esteban Legru.
Hello, hello.
Great to be here. Good friend. Good friend. Also, music producer, DJ.
Keep them coming.
Cannabis connoisseur.
Child model.
A connoisseur. I made it up.
I'm a con.
A con. Con artist.
And confidence man.
A confidence man.
Good con to see man. You, man.
You too. It's been a while.
Yeah. Usually we're having pizza conversations.
Yeah, right.
I love that. I'm always happy to see you.
You too, Ben. I'm glad I was able to get you on the show and discuss many, many things, including the fact you make music, and you also brought this.
Got a little melodic here for those of you.
We're bringing it back, old school radio. We got the live instruments doing the little sound effects.
We need to hire a Foley artist.
Yeah. yeah, I'm digging
That's awesome.
It.
AM radio.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
WCPT 820 AM.
Yeah. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
I'd say I'm a DJ by occupation. A multi-instrumentalist. Music is a huge passion of mine. Music, art, shout out everybody, all our mutual homies in Chicago, X-Men crew. It's been real interesting, kind of, you know what I mean, finding footing as a professional in the city, I guess, after the last year.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a real reset all around, I think.
And you've always traveled DJing and doing shows and everything,
yeah.
too. Did that change as, I'm sure it did, but did it change as much?
I just was in L.A. this past few weeks ago, first time essentially in like 2 years.
Hmm.
And I think before that, we started kind of traveling a little bit in like 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
That was just sort of the first time I think we were getting opportunities out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was in LA for every other month or something, you know, between those years, or at least New York, San Francisco, LA. And yeah, it was crazy not being there for so long. You know what I mean? Like, they've been, you know, kind of handling everything in California their own way too.
Yeah.
So the opportunities to be out there and places to play or whatever.
Are there big differences between the way the clubs and everything work?
LA was the first time, in terms of just the current era, that was the first time that I you know, you had to show your vax card and do the whole thing to kind of gain entry into a place. So that's certainly a change.
But like between there and here? Like
as far as just the vibes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would say out west, it's a real more kind of, I think, maybe it's just a Chicago thing. I feel like we really, the DJs here are a real open genre.
Mm.
Or at least a lot of, you know, my bread and butter was really kind of playing everything. You know, not really pigeonholing ourselves too much in one kind of genre. Out west, I'm just playing like funk music.
Okay.
It's like funk music and sweet soul music.
Yeah.
And
well, you always spin
circus music.
Do you play that while you DJ?
Yeah, sure do.
Nice.
Yeah. but yeah, just, you know, there's so much of the culture out there, you know what I mean? And a lot, you know, the big up the funk freaks, big up funky soul. Those are all, you know, just crews that have been throwing parties, kind of similar, you know, big up Soul Summit here in Chicago, Windy City Soul Club.
Oh, yeah, Soul Summit.
get a quick plug in there. Winnie City Soul Club and Soul Summit in the next month are going to be having parties.
Okay.
Sleeping Village and Empty Bottle. I think they're bringing in J-Rock and Peanut Butter Wolf.
Yeah, for anybody that's never been or never heard of that, and you like funk music, they are definitely parties to be at.
Yeah.
It's always like special guest DJs from around the world or producers.
Yeah. I think J-Rock is one of the best DJs ever.
Yeah.
I'm thankful to be able to have kind of gotten to play with dude. And, you know, we had Peanut Butter Wolf at my old gig at the Owl a few times. And,
cool. And you always bring a lot of 45 records with you, too.
Yeah, 45s is an obsessive buying habit.
Yeah.
When my house looks like a jukebox exploded.
And that's what I wanted to get into, too. Like, and it probably could take up the whole show, because, I always see your Instagram posts when he travels, and he goes through the TSA.
Oh, TSA. They're digging in the crates, too. You got bags.
Come on, man. I got a plane to catch.
Yeah. if you're carrying records, it behooves you to show up a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Only recently, actually, on this last trip, they let them go through, and you kind of feel like you're getting away with something.
Yeah.
But it's good because you kind of want to hide the weed in the other bag. I like to keep the weed in the bag that's not with the records if we want to go, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Smart.
Get into some methods. So
what you need is records made of
Okay.
We made of hash, you know?
Yeah.
So then just break off a piece.
No, I love that. TSA won't find it. That's the best part.
Yeah.
I don't have any faith in their methods.
Yeah. But you go through all the time, so do any of them recognize you ever?
No.
You again?
Some of them are more enthusiastic about records than others. You can tell, you know what I mean? Like, you're the real DJ. You know, they're stoked that you're there with some sort of analog music technology. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
do you get a lot into like electronic DJing though? You know, like, because I don't even get it, but I see like the little like virtual sort of turntables that you see on some of the modern setups that people have. Do you get into some of that sort of stuff?
I have an iPad that has apps on it. You know what I mean? Like, I dig the convenience of it, man. One time I was at a street fest or something, and I saw a guy with one of these little kind of piece of crap controllers, you know what I mean, and an iPad, and he's playing rockabilly music or something. And man, he was killing it. And nobody cared. You know, half the time people really don't care.
Yeah.
I think what medium you're playing off of. The majority of people are, you know, there's no expectation that you're playing records. I kind of miss the days for lack of an alternative, when we came up, that was, you just had records, you know what I mean? Like in the early 2000s, if you were playing, you know, Serato wasn't out. For people who don't know, that's sort of like digital DJ, you know, standard software. My friend told me my digital DJing is in a 2008 cutting edge technology. I still have like the first SL1 box.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like that's gonna blow up in my face at some day.
Like runs on Windows XP or something.
I literally downgraded an OS system for an iPad that I had so that it could still run this completely non-proprietary program at this point. I think that there should maybe be some sort of like artificial barrier to DJing beyond, you know, just like having a friend that books in place.
And the way it is now with the technology too, and the iPad, you could combine so many things. You could have like these different eras of music. Like you have the, what's that thing called again?
This melodica right here.
The melodica. You have the melodica. You could have.
Yeah.
But you could have that. You could have real turntables. You could have your iPad and have all of that together.
So I think that's always been a vision of mine have like Thievery Corporation and I guess RJD2 or some of those people to an extent that combine the organic elements of live music with sort of with electronic experimentation. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I have a kalimba up there.
Heck yeah. I got a kalimba, you know what I mean?
Do you have an electric kalimba?
I do, actually, yeah. That's big in West African music, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, you put some distortion on that, you really like...
Oh, yeah.
You come up with some cool-ass sound.
I like it.
I wish I had a whole bag of tricks I hear. I should have educate our listeners.
I should have thought of that. Just bring all your stuff, bring all your equipment, man. Make some beats, live beats.
I'd be like a Carrot Top at that point.
Yeah, right.
It's like music, though.
The musical Carrot Top,
like a prop DJ.
Yeah, right.
Give me my props with my bag of props.
I like it. That could be a whole new career move.
It might be. Honestly, I think everybody needs to kind of diversify at this point.
Yeah,
the game has changed so much, and I think the goal markers have moved a lot on what is even, you know, I mean, what success is or something.
What standard?
For me, really, things came together though. Like you were saying, though, when we started getting out of town,
yeah,
and that informed. Improved our ability to bring people back. You know what I mean? Like you start kind of expanding your Rolodex a little bit, and now you know you're trading gigs, and you know people are bringing you out. I'm gonna be in New York next month, and you know it's just like my homie Big Up Case Bloom in Nashville. He calls it the big excuse.
Okay,
like bringing your friends to town and playing these gigs.
Oh yeah,
and stuff. It's just sort of ultimately that. The DJing just exists for, you know, the hours, 5 hours
just to travel.
At the club. Yeah, you know what I mean? But the rest of the time, you know, just hanging out and eating tacos. So. I could have brought some of those, too, actually.
Yeah, always. Always bring the tacos. But you also produce for artists as well.
Yeah.
Like, friend of the show, John, from Illuminati Congo.
Illuminati Congo.
Stuff with him.
Big up them. Big up Nick the Graduate. I was just hanging out with him last night. Anybody that's into kind of esoteric reggae, hip-hop, Illuminati Congo is a Chicago staple for that. And he's a really good example of a guy whose influence expands beyond.
Oh, yeah. I had him on the show. He's been on the show twice.
Awesome.
And the second time I had him, you know, of course, me and him are going to get into some deep combos.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
I'll send you the link to those.
It was fire.
The second one was right before he put out his Time album.
Yeah.
So we did a whole show about Time.
Time Killers.
Time Killers.
I produced that record with him.
Oh, word.
Yeah, they used, I touch every track on that.
Yeah.
We had Shabazz Palaces on there. Man, I'm trying to remember who else was on there.
Do you have any projects like that in the works now?
I'm actually working with Ganja Sufi right now, who's a real ill MC producer from the West Coast. And, a couple little things just here and there. I've made so much music in the last year that was really kind of my whole focus, you know, when we all got put inside, you know what I mean? Kind of like, I've been a hired gun a lot over the years, just playing instruments and you know, like, you're always kind of looking over somebody's shoulder and saying, well, I moved that snare a little bit to the right, and being able to really kind of like lock in and learn a DAW and kind of like do that stuff on my own has been kind of a real journey, so to speak.
You know?
You're kind of like collaborating with your limitations.
There you go.
How about that?
I like it. I like it. But are you the music that you've been working on this past year, are you going to release it as anything?
Yeah, I got a project coming out with ETC, which is Radius.
Oh, yeah.
That music is all done. He's kind of traveling around right now. I'm not sure exactly when that. We're going to do a cassette and a 7-inch.
Okay.
But that is the plan.
Nice.
But yeah, just so many. Did you get those beats that I sent you?
Yes.
Oh, good.
And we will play them when we get to.
That's
to
one.
Break.
Yeah,
we still got a couple minutes.
No, it's all good. yeah, some of those are, you know, some stuff I've been working on, and same kind of ideas. It is sample based music where you can't really. I like that sort of Dungeon Family style. Mm-hmm. where the stuff you think is a sample isn't a sample.
Yeah.
You know, and it's vice versa. You know, just kind of like.
So you're adding a lot of live stuff.
Yeah, over, you know, absolutely.
Intertwined.
And obviously Madlib.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I'm a huge Madlib stan,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think that guy's just sort of an archetype of creativity, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And it just, I love the intersection of, like, musical ability, record collection, you know, and hardware,
yeah.
you know.
I don't know if it's true, but I heard that when he did the Blue Note album, that supposedly, like, an intern messed up, like,
you know,
the hard
really
drive
funny?
Or something, and then he had to, like, redo the whole album from memory in, like, a day.
Yeah, he rebuilt the whole thing. And
that's wild.
Yeah, somebody kicked the cord on that. I think there's some controversy over who was the actual
right. person. Sabotage.
Yeah. But, yeah, he's a perfect example of a guy who's not too hung up on the process
mm-hmm.
and... what comes out is just what comes out. You know what I mean? If you collab with that guy, he just sends you a CDR with, you know, just one-off tracks that mm-hmm. he sort of put together, you know, that you're not going to get to multi-tracks and get to really clean
right,
it all
right.
up. All, you know, just grimy.
Yeah.
Just real grimy stuff.
Okay.
Which is helpful if you don't really know what you're doing either, you know?
True.
You're going to come out with the sound that you're going to kind of come out with. But definitely playing instruments and kind of following your ears. And that's why I like hardware is stuff that you don't have to... If you can make the music without having to stare at a computer for hours and hours, that's, mm-hmm. that's always going to be helpful. Or I think, you know, just a kind of more fulfilling process, you know, following your ears to the destination as opposed to, like...
kind of
look at everything,
bit piecing everything together, but you're like looking at the actual equipment kind of
Addicted to your phone?
Me?
Yeah.
I would say partially.
Yeah, what's your screen time like?
It depends on the day.
You wake up and look at your phone?
Is that
the first light that hits your eyes?
No, the first light is probably the bathroom light when I go to the bathroom when I wake up. But no, but I do, yeah, definitely. But I've been better at, like,
my first light's turning the dab torch. That's my first light of the day.
Just see this. It's like dark as a cave in the room, and it's like I see. It's like
mini torch going just, off. Yes,
or you have to get like a timer so that mm-hmm. you know how people get like that. The, you know, you have your coffee set with a timer.
Oh yeah,
but you can have like a dab torch timer. Why, so like it just wakes you up. The smell of the dab.
That sounds like a fire hazard.
Why is my bed on fire?
I bought a Puffco.
What's that?
A Puffco is like it's a portable dab rig.
Okay.
And it's all electronic, but it literally interacts with an app. This guy knows, right?
No, I'm intrigued.
It's incredible. I can show you guys. It's an app that pops up on your phone, and you can control all of the, looks like that.
Crazy.
Huh. Just for people at home, it just shows you a picture of the dab rig, and then
you can show the camera.
Look at that
for the Facebook Live listeners.
Yeah, we are on Facebook Live, everybody. You control the temperature. You control the, you know, it's all Bluetooth enabled. So yeah, you literally could be firing up a dab, and then I don't know if it has a timer on it, but the. It certainly is as futuristic as anything I've ever gotten around.
Okay, some sort of like bootleg app out there though that like uses your like alarm in order. Like you just set your alarm.
Oh, nice aftermarket. Right. Yeah, that's because
that would be
collab.
The way to do it. Yeah, jailbreak your dab.
She's like,
it's pretty amazing though.
So
I don't like the torch. I'm not.
Yeah, the torch thing always kind of weirded me out. It's like kind of a little crackish to me. But
it's very crackish.
Yeah. But let's talk. Let's hold up because we got to take a commercial break. But I want to get into this the technology of cannabis and other such things.
Cool.
But let's play one of your beats. Which one of the three do you want to play?
Surprise me.
All right, Paul, surprise him.
Ooh. We'll be right back.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Like it.
Yeah.
Live music.
Live.
It live. Might be actually the first time I've had a live music in the studio. And that is Esteban LeGrew.
What's up?
Local and national, international DJ, producer.
My friend told me I was world famous in Chicago.
Hey, that's a big place to be world famous in, though. Yeah. Come on. Before we get into, the technology of cannabis, but we got a caller, we got a listener. Jim wants to say something. What you got, Jim?
Hi, guys. I'm thinking, I was at a kinetic playground years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I bought him a cigarette from a girl, and she gave me a joint.
Nice.
Anyway, I smoked half of it. It was mind-blowing stuff. The next day, I'm calling information. In those days, you'd deal 411 in those days. And I had a roach left. And I took it, I opened it up, and it was black and red. I'd never seen reefer like this in my life. Right? Mm. So I took a little puff of that. I couldn't remember who I was talking to. I said, I don't know if you guys, ever smoked that stuff. Damn, I read. I'm the Vietnam era. I smoke Vietnamese. I could they have good beer too, but damn, I read it was the best I ever smoked in my life.
I don't know if I had that. I had Acapulco Gold back in the day.
Yeah,
Damn, I read was the best. Anyway, guys, have a great show. I guess.
No, appreciate it, Jim. Thank you. Always good to bring up the old school. Cannabis lingo and names.
The tie stick. Yeah, I remember the tie stick. Yeah, that was still something we were looking around for in the early 2000s.
Or
the 90s or something. Yep. You know? Panama Red, for our listener, if you would like to recreate that experience, any of kind of the Central American land race sativa strains would be very similar to that. I would actually... If you were interested, maybe go and try the Redheaded Stranger by Revolution.
Okay.
That's an Illinois-grown strain. It's the Willie Nelson strain.
Ooh. Okay.
And just typically, I think, for people that are trying to recreate, like, a 60s smoking experience, you want to find a sativa that's in, like, the teen THC
percentage.
Level.
Yeah.
Find something about 16% THC. That's a sativa, and ideally it'll be pretty similar to kind of what you might have found in the day, you know? Everything is, we were kind of talking during the break about the difference between weed then and now.
Yeah.
And the media will still put out real paranoid stories about, you know, what the dangers of cannabis or whatever, but there's something to be said for... The THC percentages that we have access to these days on a day-to-day basis supersedes anything that was available to your average consumer in the past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not like there wasn't hashish or things that were in a high percentage range, but just by and large, just the flower that we smoke... We don't really know what the result of that is.
Yeah, that's true. I think about that too with especially with like younger smokers.
Yeah.
I think it's one thing, you know, like I'm sure you came up the same with me. It was like when you're a kid and you're getting off the street, you're getting like, you know, Indiana ditchweed or whatever you can get. And you kind of build up your tolerance as you go along. Then finally you get to the good stuff. But these kids are like starting off with dabs and shatter and like stuff that's like super high percentage.
I kind of think there should still be like an introductory bad weed experience that people should kind of have to leapfrog to get into the door. You know what I mean? Like if you go to the dispensary, you can, you know, you have to buy this, you know, low octane weed to get started.
I agree.
And just, you know, sheer mathematics. I don't know how interesting this is to everybody, but the thing that's happening now in dispensaries, talking about moving the goalposts of things, the conversation now around the 30% THC is the conversation that was happening in the early 2000s around 20%.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find weed above 20%.
Right.
Or if, you know, 20, 22, 23. And you get people who are just starting, you know, whatever, some soccer mom that just started using cannabis because of legalization. And they come right out the gate saying, what do you have that's 25%?
Yeah.
And our people get it in their mind that anything less than that or is bad or is, you know, below their kind of desired tolerance.
Yeah.
You know?
Which it's totally.
And the same thing is happening now. Larry OG was the first strain to go past 30%, I think, in mid-2010s. And now if you're in a store these days, people come in, they don't want anything under 30%.
Wow.
Maybe that's just an evolution of consumerism, but it seems a little weird. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's got to be, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So there's got to be some sort of side effect to using this high octane weed on a daily basis. You know what I mean?
For sure. And you made a good point, too, about starting off, you know, with lower percentage or people not realizing that you don't need that high of a percentage, especially if you just started to smoke.
Yeah. Or maybe you do once you start and you're stuck in the 32%, right?
I mean, yeah, if you start off like that. But, yeah. I mean, I think people go in thinking, yeah, they have that consumer mindset where it's like, well, I want the best.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the percentage is the best. And it's like, well, no, that doesn't necessarily mean that. It's kind of like, you know, with, like, craft beer or something, you know, like you don't have to go, I'm going to get the 12% or, you know, 5% beers, you know.
Yeah, right. And that may be a more manageable experience ultimately, you know what I mean? To have a few Modelos instead of whatever, drinking three Sammy Smiths or something.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I can tell you. Let's take another caller. We got Ted. What's going on, Ted?
Hey, guys, listen to your conversation. I mean, the answer doesn't get any simpler than this. It just requires just a couple hits. That's the whole idea. You know, you don't have to make joints with using newspaper like giant leaves. Right? And you should really never have burn-off. You know, you should never be – why would you be smoking a joint of this pot that's available today? Mm-hmm. You want to have a one-hit kind of a mechanism, you know, that where you're using very little. It's really the great – you know, I hate that argument because then people who aren't experienced, you know, are like, oh, the potency, oh, my God. Yeah, the potency is so that you don't have to smoke so much and have burn-off. You know, I mean,
that's a good point.
That's the whole idea, I guess. That's what I wanted to contribute. And I love your show, man. This is a great show.
Thanks.
What an out-of-the-box show. It's appointment radio for me, guys.
Oh, man. Oh, thanks a lot, Ted. I really appreciate that. No, definitely. I'm glad you called in. And, that's a good point, though. You know, one-hitters. What do you think?
I hate one-hitters. I totally respect the Ted's perspective. I always find myself, the better the weed, the more of it I smoke. You know, you would think that I've been smoking spliffs for a long time.
Yeah.
That's another conversation if you want to get into tobacco and weed. Tobacco has a way of taking weed that would be very sort of chronic and indica and turns it into a little bit more of a sativa experience when you mix in the nicotine.
Uh-huh.
In my personal experience, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
It definitely lends itself to chain smoking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Ideally, shoot. I think that probably plays just as well into the idea of the dabs. You know, the benefit for me of concentrates is that you don't have to smoke a big joint to get, you know, it's a lot less sort of pressure on your lungs.
Even that small amount of, because I think it's just I'm not used to it. Like, I don't have a dab mechanism, and just hit it whenever somebody has it, usually with you.
If you got $400 laying around, you could buy it.
So that brings us back to the tech of cannabis,
yeah,
which is strange to me, too, because when you think about, you know, when I came up, I'm sure when you came up, probably when Paul came up, cannabis was like the whole kind of perception of it or the thing about it was like the natural essence of it, you know, and the kind of the mythology behind it of where it came from and how it connects us to the earth. And
well, and to be lumped in with hard drugs, and it's like marijuana is so innocent compared to cocaine and heroin and methamphetamine. And, you know,
But it was also that, you know, there was just like this kind of natural essence. But now we have all this like these mechanisms, you know, with the vape cartridges.
Oh, just the way you can kind of microdose and control your highs, you know, edibles, tinctures, you know, the flower, dab, you know, I mean, it's just crazy.
You got apps on your phone to run your thing.
Yeah, it's totally bizarre. It's also worth noting that I always have to point out the fact that we have come so far, but the federal government hasn't.
Mm.
The federal government still is in the exact same state of denial that it ever has been.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the lies that they're responsible for. By maintaining cannabis as a Schedule I substance, they don't have to reconcile that.
Yeah.
Allowing states to kind of do their thing and really take a hands-off approach, which is what the federal government has been doing,
yeah.
By and large, in the last couple of presidencies. By any reasonable metric, the lies about cannabis would need some type of like public health announcement from the government to say to at least even to save face. You know, you know, they're telling you it's going to make you go and kill your kids or something.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to admit that there's some reason why their stance has changed. And what has happened is overnight, basically just because of economics, states have been allowed to completely 180, you know, going from kicking your door in to, you know, taxing you of usurious amounts. In Illinois is about 41%. And it's just amazing to me that the people that are at the front line of that re-education campaign are the people working at dispensaries, you know, which are by and large out of work DJs, and you know, I mean, people looking, you know, the people that the Apple Store didn't call back, who end up at working at a dispensary. Those people effectively become on the front line of reinforming the public,
But there's still, I think, part of the problem is that, you know, if you think of the criminalization of cannabis stems from an amalgamation of like all the problems of American society, of the U.S. society, racism, corporate influence, you know, anti-counterculture. Like, this is all, you know, if you go back to like William Hearst, who really used his newspaper industry to rail against marijuana. He's the one that labeled it marijuana in order to give it a Mexican-sounding name.
Absolutely.
To make it racism, right? They made all these lies about, black guys smoke it and they'll, like, rape your wife and stuff, right?
All the jazz players.
Yeah, exactly, right. I mean, there was that. And then the other fact, you know, part of the reason he was going against it was because he owned paper manufacturing.
Yeah,
he was cutting down trees.
DuPont and all
and
these.
DuPont,
yeah.
You know, the oil industry. So you have all of that. And then you get into the 60s. And then, you know, when Nixon came in power, he really initiated the war on drugs.
Absolutely.
And it was purposely, you know, to kind of target, you know, the hippie culture and black culture, you know, with the criminalization of cannabis and also like heroin and everything. But
yeah, it was to curb the countercultural or the, the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement.
Yeah, it was like, oh, we don't got these, you know, people out here protesting.
And
let's create something.
And that is exactly still what's happening.
Exactly.
You know, they never flip face on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. So, you know, you have darn near like half of the states now have some type of legalization set up.
Yeah.
And the federal government just gets to play like it's like it hasn't been lying to people for 100
right.
years.
And it creates such a hard kind of business model for people as well, because you have, you know, you can't use banks because it's not federally legal.
Right.
So
yeah.
You have, you know, all this cash floating around. And I knew people that worked in dispensaries in San Francisco and Oakland, and they're talking about, you know, gangs would run up in there with, you know, machine guns.
Well, that happened in Chicago. Mocha. That was
right.
2 days after legalization. They, you know, who knows where that direct thing came from. But yeah, exactly. That's definitely still an issue.
Which, you know, creates, it's like it's legal, but it's still kind of black market. Weird.
I think that by and large, the legal market and the cannabis market is it's a pun. It's no different than anything else. You know what I mean? The corporatization of it, yeah. And the, you know, the people making the money, and it's just a coincidence that it's weed. If you're in these weed stores, you pretty much don't even know that there's weed being sold. It could just be a high end supplement store for as the way that they covertly package this weed to rich people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like they didn't do anything about the black market. That's
right.
You know what I mean. That's still 96% of cannabis sold is on the black market still, even with our regulatory kind of dispensary or systems that we have in place. I just think these companies like to pretend like what they're doing is normalizing cannabis and making it seem regular or whatever. And I don't see a lot of evidence for that.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about it since it's been legalized, how minorities got just completely blocked out, and the whole selling point was going to be, at least I know in Chicago, they were talking about how, it's going to help the communities. We're going to help people from the community be able to help their community. And it's like, like you're saying, the corporate... Exactly. Just like the corporate mechanism that is put in place and some of these, it's funny to me because growing up, it was always such a taboo thing. And, the fight for legalization was always just a battle. And now it's just like that. And now people are making money. And I wonder and question how many of these people that got into it were on the other side, 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, what was his name? Anthony Weiner.
Yeah,
did it?
The former governor of New Jersey.
Are you allowed to say that on the air?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you pronounce it different, but I said it like that on purpose.
The guy that was with the intern on the Appalachian Trail? Remember, he said he was hiking the Appalachian Trail, but he was like ran off.
No, I think that was a different.
No, he was sending dick pics.
And then I want to say he had another
Another thing. Yeah, yeah.
I think repeated. But that was somebody else, right?
Wasn't that Sanford that had the? And even then, I don't know. There's so many different politicians.
I know.
That are weird.
but this guy that I'm talking about was like totally. Against legalization.
Oh, word.
And then as soon as he got out of office and it became legal, he started a company.
Oh, right.
Or bought a company.
Amazing.
And he's making like millions off of it.
That sounds about right.
These guys don't really believe in the stuff they're doing.
Boehner. That's who it was.
Boehner's
making money off weed?
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Weiner was the guy with maybe I like subconsciously said it that way because of the indiscretions.
You've said Wiener five times in the last 3 minutes.
I mean, what? It's a hot dog. I mean, it's Chicago. We got hot dogs here.
Yeah, there's no end to the lack of scruples these guys have.
Guy was reading articles too about like in Canada it was really like that, and like these venture capitalists and everything just like I'm gonna get in on that, and these guys have the money, and then the government sets it up in a way that if you don't have the money you can't do it, so all these people, especially in Cali, where it was, first became medicinally legal, and you had a lot of people that started from the ground up that were doing it. And then when they made it, recreationally legal, they changed the laws in a way that you had to have a ton of money in order to have a dispensary or have a grow house. Mm-hmm. And it pushed a lot of these original people out, the ones that built up the foundation of it.
Yep.
And it was just...
No, there's an impetus that... You get the impression if you're not rich already, they don't want you getting rich off of this.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
The people who really were prisoners of war, of the drug war, I've been one myself, you know what I mean? Those aren't the people that they're hiring into these companies. The people that I see that are in corporate cannabis look like they've been throwing the B around the quad for the last, 12 years. They weren't running packs across state lines, and by and large, even in some places where, your background, disallows you opportunities.
Yeah. They never had a bologna sandwich for dinner. But, we got to take a break. Let's play another beat. Pick one, Paul, and I will be back with more Think Theory Radio. Oh.
You're listening to WCPT 820, because facts matter.
Man, I remember when a dime bag cost a dime.
Give me some now.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and I'm joined by Esteban Legru.
Hi-yo.
And we've been having a great discussion. Hey, cannabis.
I want to shout out my girlfriend, Anna. I think she might be listening. Also, my homie, Christy.
Word.
I think she might be listening right now. How's it going, y'all?
Everybody else that's listening?
Everybody else is listening. Big up yourselves, yes. Personally. Say your own name out loud. Or call us up and say it. Do you think there's aliens? Or what do you think is going on with the aliens?
Have you not listened to my show? Are you asking me or are you asking the listeners? Because, I mean, what you just asking the listeners, we're going to get like a dozen calls before we can answer them.
Let's just ask rhetorical questions for the next 10 minutes.
Okay, do you believe...
Who's running the show?
Yeah. What God do you believe in?
The one God. It's all... that's it. Oh, was that a rhetorical question or are you asking the audience right now?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh,
either way.
You're just going to go back and forth and just ask questions and never even answer it.
What is your take on it, though?
On God or aliens?
Or is there a difference?
Is there a difference?
Yeah, there's got to be a difference. But
my personal belief
is
that.
I mean, if there is God, God created aliens.
Yeah,
right?
I believe that.
Or wouldn't God be an alien?
Maybe.
That's not from Earth.
Well, yeah, God is an alien. God doesn't live on Earth.
Or is God Earth?
What's God's residence?
What if God was one of us?
Where do I sign the letters?
Just a slob.
Yeah.
Like one of us.
On a bus. I personally believe that God is a mathematical equation that's beyond human comprehension.
Okay, I get that.
That's my...
If you look into what goes on inside of a black hole, I think you get into some of the area of what God is.
Yeah.
Things get infinitely small and infinitely heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And... to me, that's butting up against more of, you know, sort of the omnipresence of...
Well, there's even theories that on the other side of a black hole is the emergence of another universe.
Feel that?
So it could be like these bubble universes that kind of, because of that compression, because if you think about, you know, the singularity that started the universe, right? It was everything, all energy that exists in the universe now existed in this singularity that was minuscule and then exploded out, big bang, blah, 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 right? So if it gets sucked back in, and there is some theories that believe maybe that's the black hole, it's sucking everything in, and then on the other side, it's ejecting a whole new universe.
Crazy.
So there's all these, like...
Everything's on the one. That's what Brother George said. Everything is on the one. I missed it. You saw that Liquid Soul in Parliament played at the Space in Evanston last Sunday.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah. You ever met George?
George Clinton?
Yeah.
I've been to several of his shows. I never met him.
Met him one time, and then I opened up for them one time, and I tried to go backstage, and they were like... Nope. I was like, but I'm the DJ. And they're like, nope.
I actually saw him in Paris once.
No kidding. Who,
yeah.
Parliament?
Yeah,
like,
Parliament.
Saw the whole thing. Crazy.
And, I was a little off my rocker, and I tried to jump on stage from
Who's
the balcony.
Even still in Parliament? Is it just George and a bunch of musicians?
I'm not sure exactly.
In practical terms, yes, absolutely.
I know, like, I think Bootsy doesn't tour anymore.
No, I don't think he's been a part of the mothership for a minute. But there's dudes that have been in that band for a real long time. You know what I mean?
Guys that are in it now probably have been in it longer than the
Bootsy
original.
And Bernie Worrell. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, I met Bernie one time.
Rest in peace.
This was the same festival that I got to meet George, but... I
heard he's cool, though, Bernie Worrell.
He wasn't to me.
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
Get out of my face.
I think I just rubbed in the wrong way. They had like a big jam, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And Galactic was there, and, you know, it was like a real like jam band festival down in the Ozarks. And I had an artist pass, and I was standing on the side of the stage. And Bernie was standing next to me. He had a big cowboy hat on, and he walked out and he got into the jam for a section for a second. It really like brought it up, brought up the energy. You know what I mean? And he came back, and then he left, you know, and he comes back, and he's standing next to me, and I start talking to him like we're at the Blue Note in 1962. I don't know why I chose to do this, but I started talking to him like I was freaking Art Blakey. I was like, you really turned the pot up on him. And he looked at me like I had just, like, spit a sandwich. He was like, what'd you say? What'd you say to me? And I ran away. I realized, like, I'm not performing. Why am I on this stage right now? I ran back to my campsite. And that's the one time I talked to Bernie Worrell.
All right, so it doesn't mean he's a mean person.
No, he doesn't like...
just a weird, awkward interaction.
He doesn't like old jazz slang.
Yeah, he doesn't like little white hippie people right, speaking jive to him, probably, right. Is what he doesn't like.
That makes sense.
Totally reasonable.
Yeah.
But yeah, rest in peace. He's a goat, you know what I mean? He's huge, hugely influential. We were talking about the guy on my shirt, Lee Scratch Perry,
yes,
man.
Rest in
peace. Talk about
too.
Scratch every time, man. Such a mystic, motivated, magical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was reading about how he burned down one of his studios because he thought it was possessed.
Yeah, famously. So the Congos must have really done, they must have really ashed in his soup, man. Yeah. He did not like, after he worked with the Congos, he burnt down the Black Ark. But he was like a pyromaniac. His you know, his whole, I had a homie that played with him for years, and he said that they were sitting at an airport, and they're sitting at the gate, and Scratch is sitting there just setting stuff on fire, you know, just setting paper on fire, which, you know, you're not supposed to do that at the airport. And he said, my homie was like, I don't know if you're even supposed to have a lighter here. And he said he opened his bag and he had like 50 of them. He's like, man, mine got enough lighter.
Stare into the flames.
Yeah, that's honestly one of the best, like, thinking of the way he moved around the world. And like, he was a legend if you knew who he was, but he was a fringe musical artist. You know, most people, you know, if when he's at Harrods trying to buy some socks, the guy doesn't know who he is. He's just like a guy in Superman pajamas, you know, like, and a crown on his head, you know, like, I think he maintained his own dignity in spite of, you know, people not necessarily knowing who he was. You know,
I always admire those that can do that in life.
Yeah.
Where it's just, you know, and, you know, maybe to us we see it as, oh, this person's really, like, you know, kind of eccentric or whatever, you know. But in their own perception of their own mind, it's, you know, they're just living a normal reality.
Yeah.
You know. Speaking of aliens, he called himself, he said he's an alien, but he also said he was an elf, or he's half elf.
He used to say he was a fish a lot, too.
A fish? Well,
Well, he's a Pisces, so he was really tied into the idea of being underwater and being a fish. And obviously, being in Jamaica, you're real attached to, you know, the ocean is a part, you know, in your spirit all the time. And
yeah.
You know, like, but yeah.
Do you believe the dolphins were aliens?
I think there's stuff going down under the water that we don't know about.
That's like the Dogon tribe, believe.
Yeah.
That.
I didn't know they had dolphin things going on.
Yeah, it's like the dolphins were, they used to, and which is interesting because they actually, dolphins did exist on land.
Crazy.
There were four-legged creatures at a point in time, and whales as well. That's why they're mammals.
Crazy.
And breathe air. Yeah. And the Dogon, in part of their creation myth, it was that the whales and dolphins came and they taught them about, you know, the universe and science and astrology.
Dogon
and
knew, Dogon,
going into the ocean to live.
Dogon know about Sirius too. You know,
exactly.
And,
yeah.
Like, and it's interesting too. We're talking about cannabis. Same thing. You know, it's a two-dog star. You know, it's a canine, bis, bi, you know, so cannabis means two dogs.
Wow. I never knew that.
How about that? And then you go with the Dogon, with the stars, with Sirius A and B. That's not visible to the naked eye from the ground.
Yeah.
That they're two stars.
And they had star maps in their caves, like ancient hieroglyphs.
Yeah, crazy.
Cave paintings, whatever.
The reconciliation of the great forgetting is going to determine our longevity.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think we'll have to leave it there.
We got deep. Give me a little pound. Yeah. This has been a pleasure, guys.
Man, yeah, it flew
it went
by
real
again.
Fast. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. We'll have you back on, and you're going to bring more equipment with you.
I will.
And let people know. Let people know where they can find your work, any of your stuff.
You can check me out. I got on Bandcamp. If you go to Estebanlagroue, Esteban LaGrue, I got a beat tape on there. Yeah, if you search me, I just did a live thing last month with Eximino Records and Dub Lab and Soul on the Horn, which is a party in New York. So I got a video on YouTube right now of me cutting 45s. And
okay.
If you're in the city, Wednesdays at Esmeralda's, I think, is like my most kind of regular gig right now. Just a lot of Latin and reggae and funk and
That's what's going on. Well, thanks again, man, for coming on. It was so much fun, man.
Total pleasure. Thank you, both of you guys.
And, and thanks, everybody, for listening and to our callers. And we'll be back again next week and every Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m., right here on WCPT 820.